Hello, this is Lunch with Leon, and I'm Leon Daniels. Every week, I try and find somebody interesting from around the world to come and have lunch with me and to share that conversation with you. Lunch with Leon is an ITTHub.net production. Please go to the website, ITTHub.net, for all the latest news in the transport world. Also, details of this podcast and our other podcasts, all of which are easily subscribed from the website, so do check it out. My guest this week is Aviv Frankel. Aviv is the founder and chief executive of Enroute, which is a Tel Aviv tech startup company, which is doing something really exciting in the transport world. With Enroute, public transport agencies and companies can give free travel to passengers. And Aviv is here to tell us how. So Aviv, first question, which everybody's going to be asking is, what's daily life like for you in Tel Aviv?
So, for the first 2 months of lockdown, everybody was at home. We, you know, most of the places were shut down. But now life is more of the same, back to normal. I mean, people are wearing masks whenever they go out or get into a different place. You can see our offices here. You can see dividers between the chairs just behind me. Life has changed, but I'm a very optimistic person. If I wasn't optimistic, I wouldn't become an entrepreneur. So I'm crossing my fingers for a vaccine in the next 2-3 months, and then we will have COVID as a memory.
Well, I'm looking forward to the vaccine too, because I'm looking forward to coming and visiting you, especially on a Friday afternoon, as we've done previously. So why don't you maybe just explain to everybody who's listening how you came to think about Enroute and how it came to be, and tell us all about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got some sort of a research from a friend that told me that in the UK, 20% of all online shopping occurs every morning between 7 and 9 a.m. when people go on a train or the underground or a bus, and they're actually shopping for a lot. And that's a huge thing. And then it made me think. I went into taxis and I asked taxi drivers, do people buy stuff online? And they said, yeah, absolutely. I wonder whether there's something in it for retailers. Why don't they pay for the ride? So that's how this whole thing went on. So I was still in TV, and I was thinking to myself, I want to build something of my own, because, you know, Israel is startup nation. Everybody is thinking on a startup here. So I was covering tech for Israeli national TV, and then I decided I want to build something of my own. And that's how we came up with Enroute. We allow passengers to ride for free as they shop, because the retailers are paying for the ride.
It's an amazing concept, and you've had some success already. So we're already operating in parts of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're an early stage company, but our first shot was in Germany. We started working with Deutsche Bahn, the national rail company of Germany. It started as a pilot, a very, very successful pilot. People bought stuff for a lot of money when they got the ride for free. And now we're launching in two new territories in the next few weeks. So we will be launching in Singapore with a major mobility company, and also in Madrid in a consortium, a collaboration with both Metro de Madrid, which is the biggest urban transportation company in Spain, Banco Santander, which is one of the biggest banks in Europe, and El Corte Inglés, which is a big retailer, and also JCDecaux, which covers the whole metro with billboards. So everybody, all hands on deck, and a small company from Israel.
That's staggering news. And so you gave up your full-time job to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. People thought I was mad doing that. I was senior tech and automotive correspondent for national TV news here in Israel. I was a presenter of TV shows. I was a co-creator of TV formats. I was a documentary filmmaker on TV here. But really, I caught a bug of entrepreneurship, and that's how I decided I'm changing my whole life and becoming an entrepreneur. It's exciting.
Well, it certainly is. And it seems to me that startup is phenomenally important now for young people. So what's your advice to young people coming out of school, coming out of college? What's your advice about how they should pursue business like this?
So it really depends where they live. I mean, if they live in a country where entrepreneurship is growing, I would give them an advice to maybe work for a year or two with startups as employees to learn how it works, or with big tech companies. It's relatively easier for people who are studying computer engineering and coding, but also people who are studying other aspects are able to get into business development or marketing or product managing in startups or in tech companies. So there are a lot of opportunities for people who are coming from different faculties in universities and colleges.
And we've always had a bit of a stigma in transport that most of the transportation companies are run by old white-haired men. And it's been very difficult to get people from different cultures, from different backgrounds, different areas to come into transportation. And I hope that we're changing that now, because it seems to me that transportation is rapidly becoming a technology and a people business. It used to be an engineering business, but now it's a technology business. And it seems to me there are lots of really fabulous opportunities in transportation for young people. And the sorts of things that occur to me is, firstly, you do actually make a difference in transportation. You are doing something useful, which is great. But as you've described, there are lots of high tech and really good jobs to be had on the edges of directly providing transportation in all the support and the marketing and the planning and the research. So I really hope that startups give us the chance to bring lots of young people from different areas into the business. So I guess you're the oldest person in en route, have you?
I'm the oldest person in the company, yeah.
That's terrifying. You see, that's absolutely terrifying.
Maybe 1 or 2 years older than my co-founder, Sagi, who's the CTO, but that, all the other people in the company are a lot younger, yeah.
Is it terrifying to have to realize that each day you have to earn enough money to pay the wage bill and pay the costs and so on? Is it, you wake up in the morning terrified, or do you wake up in the morning feeling excited?
Excited, absolutely excited, because we're building something new. We're building something that you don't have anywhere else. It's a new concept. We're not an e-commerce company. We're not a loyalty company. We're an en route company. We want to be part of your daily route. So we're starting with e-commerce, and we're starting with people getting free rides, but then we're building our click and collect capability for people to buy stuff and collect them or reserve them in a location, in a shop next to the destination, which is also bringing shopping to a more sustainable way to shop, because once you buy stuff and you collect them as part of your daily commute, you don't go on a different ride to a shop. You don't ask for a delivery. You usually don't return stuff. And so you save lots of rides and lots of emissions. And that's another cool thing that we will be able to provide. This is one of the reasons why en route won a grant from the European Union, which we're very humbled and excited to get it. You know, Israel is on the Mediterranean. Of course, it's not geographically part of Europe, but you know, in a few things, people, Israel is part of Europe. The Eurovision Song Contest, of course, that we won a couple of years ago. Sports, that we're not that good at sports, and R&D. So we're part of Europe for R&D. So that's how Israeli startups get these grants, and we're very happy to get that.
Well, I was hoping that when the UK left the European Union, we could leave the Eurovision Song Contest as well, because it's so horrible. But sadly, we're still in it. And we're never going to win in the UK, because we have so many people around the world who won't vote for us that we don't stand a chance of winning, but never mind. And so I was just thinking, the coronavirus then has probably done you a bit of a favor, because if the trend towards more online shopping and less high street retail was happening long before we had the virus, And we were also very lucky that we had the delivery capability to do online shopping. So the easy bit is shopping, the hard bit is the delivery. So it seems to me that thanks to the coronavirus, we've probably gone forward about 5 years in terms of people's preference for online shopping. So it's been good business for you, hasn't it?
So not 5 years, 10 years. I just saw a graph yesterday. The fact in 3 months, it has spiked up as much as 10 years in 3 months, which is amazing. But that's not the only reason why Corona was relatively good for us. I mean, it's not a good thing, Corona. People suffer, people died from it. For us, I think that our clients or mobility clients or partners or potential clients, they're in a situation where ridership is down and revenues are down, and they need to think fast. They need to diversify their business model, and that's why I think we were able to sign two deals in Singapore and Madrid relatively fast during the Corona, and we will be launching soon. So we're very excited about these opportunities. We're very excited about other opportunities that we get from other mobility companies that are reaching out to us.
And a lot of these mobility companies are hugely well funded by speculative investors. And it does seem to me, even though we all had experience of the dot-com boom and bust, but it's still possible, isn't it, for people with big appetites to raise millions and billions of dollars in order to run significantly loss-making mobility company businesses for several years. Yet at the other end of the scale, for small tech startups, it's sometimes quite hard to raise modest amounts of money. I mean, is that your experience too?
Well, I think raising money is always difficult. I mean, even I have a friend who raised like 30, 50 million US dollars, and he told me even when your company is hot and you have investors lining up and you need to stop them at the door, it's always hard to raise money, because it's a counterintuitive thing to do to get someone to get a checkbook and write you a check. But we're lucky, we're very happy with our current investors, and I think they're very happy with this opportunity to build something significant.
And is there anything coming from governments for you? Because here in the UK, for example, the government has done a number of things to try and keep the economy going. Monday, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you eat cheaply in restaurants because the government pays a subsidy towards it. So all the restaurants are actually flat out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They're letting us delay paying our taxes. So there's all sorts of benefits for businesses in the UK. How about for you? Is the government doing things for you?
Sure. So because Israel is a startup nation, we have this innovation authority that funds startups, especially early stage startups. So they have made a quick route to get money. So in only 4 weeks, you're able to get money to increase your run rate. So a lot of startups have applied and got money from the innovation authority. Also, we as individuals get money from the government. If you have two kids, even if you're single like me, you get some money. I think this is an interim thing, and I hope that the economy will spike up again. I think the fact that Israel is heavily based on digital economy will make it easier for us to get back to normal. Also, if you read on the news, we have a new peace agreement with the United Arab Emirates. I get lots of LinkedIn requests and people from the UAE reaching out to us. And I think there's huge opportunities they're an innovative country. We are an innovation country. There's lots of money there and lots of good investments in Israel. So I hope this also can help us boost the economy even more.
It's interesting what you say about the UAE, because in fact, all of those countries are rapidly working hard to prepare for when oil runs out. So there's an incredible diversification of their industries. They're investing hugely overseas. The biggest shareholder here in London for the Shard are the Qataris. We find there's significant amounts of business from the Middle East, significant amounts of investments going on, because the some of those early countries on gas and oil started to get rich in the late 1950s, and they're well down the road now. It's interesting to see the behavior of this, because of course oil is now going to last us a very long time because we're using so much less of it. We're using it much more efficiently. There's the decarbonization agenda that's getting us to electric and hydrogen. So the opportunity for you of investment out of the UAE in particular is going to be very strong, I'm sure of it.
This might be, you know why? Because data is the new oil. What we're bringing is lots of really interesting data, because we're in the intersection of three industries, basically e-commerce, mobility, and fintech. And so we are able to understand what do people do, of course, anonymously, aggregately. What do people do when they're on board a train? What do they buy? Where do they collect? How much do they spend? And this is data that can be very easily and interestingly monetized by mobility companies that might want to use it. So data is the new oil for us as well.
That's interesting about data, because in business, it seems to be too often businesses have plenty of data and no information. And it's so they're awash with data, but they just are not able to use it in a sensible manner. And therefore, it's actually confusing them as opposed to helping them. So what can people do under these conditions? It just seems to me, I see too many businesses where they're awash with data and don't have any information. And I often say on that basis, then you wouldn't need employees, because frankly, trained chimpanzee could do the job. If it's simply a case that, you know, if the numbers go higher than this, press button, and if the numbers go lower than that, press the other button. So what's your advice to companies that are overwhelmed with data and underprovided with useful business information?
Working with startups that can help them make sense with their data. There are a lot of companies, that's their business model, helping companies use their data and get useful information out of it. I can tell you how we look at the data that we are providing mobility companies. Let's take the London Tube, right? Let's say that there is connectivity underground in London. Okay, let's say. We can tell people who are traveling maybe with the Northern Line from East Finchley to Leicester Square. And we know that in a certain demographics there, people like to buy sports gear. Then the Tube can go to Nike or Adidas and offer them to advertise on board the Tube, or to open shops in some of their train stations, so they can usually monetize on it and get more revenues out of our data.
It's interesting. We used some anonymized data from people's mobile phones to see the journeys that people took on the Tube. And what was interesting was that whilst the majority of people took the most obvious route, quite a number of people made extraordinarily convoluted journeys. And that gave some information to us, which of course was that maybe the signage and maybe the way in which the map was depicted wasn't as intuitive as we'd always believed it was. Why would people take obscure journeys? Now, obviously, some of those people are simply making a mistake. Some of those people, I don't know, maybe we had another reason, maybe meeting somebody at another location before traveling on together. But as soon as you got rid of that...
Somebody that they didn't want their wife to know of.
Yeah, maybe that's right. Maybe they were making sure they weren't being followed by taking a counterintuitive. But it did seem that data gave some clues as to, as I say, about information, about signage, about mapping, and so on. And that data has been hugely interesting. And we used it in London in a number of cases. We used anonymized mobile phone data to show us overcrowding at sports events, overcrowding at protests, those sorts of things. And the real-time data was just incredible. So I have a friend of mine in America who's also a guest on this show, who's especially concerned about privacy. Because, of course, you are giving away huge amounts of data. And his contention is that whilst the current owners of the big companies like Apple and Amazon are benevolent and trustworthy people, there's no guarantee that that ownership will continue forever. And indeed, in due course, some of the companies that are harvesting this data and helping us could in fact become treacherous in the future and misuse the data against us. So, have you got any fears about that?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why there's GDPR, why there are these regulations in various places in Europe, in the US, in Asia, in Israel, not to misuse this information on people. I can tell you that for us as a startup, it's extremely important for us to be GDPR compliant or other regulations compliant. Everything is anonymized, everything is aggregated, so the data that will be used by mobility companies cannot trace something that Leon bought, and no one will know.
Yes, that's okay, but the raw data does exist somewhere. I mean, it's anonymized deliberately, so it could be as easily, what's the opposite of anonymized? It could easily be dis-anonymized as easily as it anonymized, isn't it? So if there was malicious intent, you could find out what I was buying.
I'm not a tech person. That's not my forte to understand how technically we do this sort of anonymization. But we're very serious about people's data and how not to misuse it. I hope this is the same thing for other companies. I know that for the European Union, I know the UK left the European Union. I don't know if GDPR is still in place in the UK. But there are strict penalties of companies who misuse data.
We still have GDPR. I quite like GDPR, actually, because I don't know about you, but I get a load of emails from companies that I once bought something from once a long time ago. So they still write to me every week and ask me if I want something else, which I don't. So the great thing about GDPR is they are obliged to come to me from time to time and check whether I want to still receive their literature, which I don't. So GDPR is great. I think we should have it every year so that we can clear out all that stuff that we don't want. So we have a gag in the UK about GDPR, and it says, excuse me, do you know a good GDPR consultant? Yes. Can you send me his email address? No. Is that great?
Absolutely.
It's good. So for the future, Abhi, for the future, how do you see it? More and more online retail, but with less deliveries and more participation by the users in an efficient way, which is what Onroute is leading on.
Absolutely. I think the world is becoming more and more digitalized. I think that mobility companies, even the most traditional ones, understand that their industry is being disrupted, and they need to become digital. They also need to be part of their passenger experience and provide new ways for people to be entertained or to give them something that will make their journey worthwhile. So this is another reason why mobility companies are pairing with us to provide this new passenger experience.
And there's something comfortable about it, isn't there? People feel comfortable with the big trade names. It is interesting. People give retailers enough information to clear out their bank accounts. You know, my credit card number, the CVV, the expiry date. And I have it all, like everybody else, I have it in my computer and on my phone. Because if I want to buy something, I just have to click, you know, buy with one click, job is done.
Exactly.
Now, isn't it interesting that people who, you know, take care of their wallet and you know, try to make sure they don't get pickpocketed, they're wary about strangers at the door, they're wary about cash transactions and so on, those same people allow almost unlimited access to their bank accounts, which they feel comfortable about because they're trading, they believe in the security, they believe the fact that the banks frankly carry all the fraud and indemnify you as the user in the meantime. But actually, we have given them lots of information, but people are very trusting of the system. Mm-hmm. If I think about, as we do on the in London with Oyster cards, we don't check those carefully. We tap in and tap out on the railway network, and we trust TfL to give us the best possible deal when we finish traveling for the day. So we might hit the price cap, or there might be some other benefit. So we're very trusting that we let the system calculate the best deal for us and charge it. And probably we only just check that roughly on our statements from time to time. So I'm amazed how the public has become a public that was very careful about its cash is in fact very trusting with its digital transactions. That says something about psychology, I think.
People want an easy life. People want things to go smoothly. And that's one of the things that is very important for us when we're building our software, to be able to make it as seamless as possible for people to not worry about stuff. But I'm sure that if there was a big fraud in TfL, the media would come in and make a big scandal on that. So there's a reason why we trust these companies, is that they're giving us good service, and we don't see scandals on fraud like that so far, of course. And you talked about privacy. We live in an era where privacy is a currency. We are getting free email from Google. They're reading maybe our emails. We do not know exactly what's going on there. Having these email, that's costing Google a lot of money, but they do monetize on our data. But still, we don't really care. We care when people ask us, do you want to stay private, etc.? And we say, yeah, absolutely. But then Google is asking us, do you want your Gmail to have like these like 20 gigabytes of email space? And we say, yeah, absolutely. We don't care how you make your money. So privacy is a currency.
No, that's interesting. Well, and I'm fascinated by how people adapt to it. When we went cash free on the buses in London in 2014, there was huge resistance from the media, and I did radio and TV shows where people were lined up, and they'd say to you things like, what about the people who don't have much money? You know, what about the poor people? How are they going to cope? I said, well, actually, you know, it was the lowest paid people that went onto the Oyster scheme to get the lowest possible price earliest.
Yeah.
And they said, well, what about people from outside London? I said, well, they'll get on a train in Bristol and buy a ticket to London Zone 1. So they'll already have a card ticket when they're traveling in the zone. What about tourists? Oh, well, they buy their Oyster cards at the airport. People, overseas business travelers, you've probably got an Oyster card with some money on it in your desk drawer that you have it too, that you can take to London the next time you have. So basically, you've put some money on that. So you've banked with TfL. It might be a year before you come to London, but you're happy about that because you just use it. So what was interesting was that then when we went cashless on bus in 2014, we had the call center geared up for thousands of complaints. And I think we had eight. People just took to it, and all the objections just fell away about the elderly, about the disabled, about the young, about the unwaged, about the tourists, about the long distance travelers. Eight complaints. And I think the following day it was six. And I'm also impressed, as I've said before, that I don't mind what some of these companies know about me. If they know when my son's birthday is and they know what sort of books he likes, the fact they send me a reminder and a special offer on a book that he might not have a week in advance is a great advantage. And that's the currency, that's the digital currency that you were talking about, because it's information, isn't it? It's not just information, it's useful information.
Yeah, unless you don't want it, and then you unsubscribe, and GDPR in Europe and also our privacy laws in Israel is pretty straightforward. And you talked about the fact that TfL had to answer a lot of questions regarding how good will this service be, this cashless service be. And that's one of the roles media have. They need to ask you these questions, and you need to make your job as good as possible so that you'll have only 8 complaints on the first day of work. And that's amazing. And that is part of how a democratic society works. That's the way it works in Israel. That's where it works in the UK and in other places. You have free media that needs to ask the hard questions. And then people either in the public service or the private sector needs to do a good job for people to use their service.
There are the remnants of your journalism career then still alive in your head, Aviv. the role of the press that you were part of. And so finally, I'm just going to say, because we've already had our 30 minutes of lunch today. Lunch in Tel Aviv is always gorgeous. Once more, I think, just to say that, as far as you're concerned, that there's still a long way to go in terms of the advancement of digital technology. There's more information to be had. There's more benefits to be had. And so we're not at the end of a process here. This is, we're very much in the early stages of it. Yeah. Am I on the right track with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We have a lot of things to achieve. I'm very optimistic and I'm very excited about the possibilities of this digital economy and the fact that mobility is becoming digital and open.
So Aviv, thank you very much indeed from Tel Aviv, telling us about Enroute, a tech startup now with great success operating internationally, bringing a whole new dimension that a dream for transport agencies and operators, which is the ability to have a scheme whereby its passengers can travel for free, and all passengers have to do is to buy some things off their app, and the retailers will pay for your journey. What a great opportunity. Free travel. Shop with us and ride for free. Aviv Frankel, thank you very much indeed for joining us today for lunch, and we'll catch you again very soon, I hope.
Thanks a lot, Leon. I'm waiting for you here in Tel Aviv. We need to catch a pint here in my favorite bar.
Thanks. Thank you.